Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4, for Spring Semester 2020. Lecture 10, delivered on February 17th. Tonight, the time value of money. Before I begin, as I had promised, I would do some a little bit of teaching on trading, specifically in equities, show you a couple of things, some terminology. You are responsible for this terminology that I'm going to use here tonight. The markets were closed today because of President's Day. So in a way, it's kind of nice because it quiets everything down. Everything's kind of quiet right now. And so I'm going to pull up Yahoo Finance for lack of any access to a better screen right now and show you a couple of things to start with. Well, let's do it this way. Yeah. Okay. First of all, markets were closed. It's quiet. And so you're seeing market data as of last week. The purpose of learning about stocks and bonds for some people is you want to make money doing this. You have different kinds of trading objectives. One would be you, sir, want to make $1 million by the time you're 30. And you're going to try to do that in the stock market. Good luck with that. But you, sir, are looking more at intermediate term. You want to save money or put money away to buy a house down the road, maybe 5-7 years. And you want to do some investments that will appreciate in value on the road so that you can make a nice down payment. And that'll save you some money on your payments when you actually take on a mortgage. You, madam, are thinking about your old age. You don't want to enter your golden years eating cat food. You don't want to have that time in your life that's supposed to be when you look back at your happy life behind you and you have, and you're thinking instead that you're hungry. So you'd like to have some money in the bank. And there are other things too. The truth be told, there are a lot of amateur and investors, personal investors, who do it just because it's fun. It's I'm investing for shits and giggles. And sometimes there's more of the former than the latter if you lose a lot of money that you could have done something else with. Whatever your objectives, though, it helps for you to know some terminology and know a few basics of how to look at stocks and bonds and other kinds of investments. Now, as in technical terms, you'll hear me use terms like equities. That's a fancy word for stock. In other words, it's an ownership position in a company. You benefit if the company does well. Theoretically, if the company's growing and making a profit, your stock price will go up. And or you'll get a nice dividend check. And those come through the equities. Now, in general, you can buy equities in different markets. The New York Stock Exchange has equities. Those are equities that you'll see on the opening screens and all that. And you can buy on lower exchanges, the OTC, the over-the-counter, the NASDAQ, smaller companies, more riskier, but a higher expected return. You got to know how much risk you're going to tolerate. An old trick, and I might have already done this, but an old trick. If I flip a coin, it's a fair coin, so there's a 50-50 chance of it coming up heads or tails. So, in other words, there is outcome. And there is probability. And let's talk about a payoff for this coin flip game. So if it's a heads, it comes up heads, that's a probability of 50%, 0.50. Oftentimes we're not supposed to say percent, we're supposed to say the decimal if it's probability, but there's that. So if it comes up a head, you get a buck. If it comes up a tail, that has a 50% chance. See, these add up. The probabilities will add up to 1. And you will get nothing. Simple game. Now, the expected value of the payoff in our world is you would take the probability of the head times the payoff to the head plus the probability of the tail times the payoff to the tail. And if you add those up, you find that your expected value, your expected payoff, would be 50 cents. Now that's the math of it. Now here's where it gets a little personal. If you, sir, you want to play this game, okay? We're going to do this. Okay, so now you have to pay a fee to join the game. If you are willing to pay something less than 50 cents to join this game, you are what we would call risk averse. If you're willing to pay exactly 50 cents to play the game, you're risk neutral. If you're willing to pay more than 50 cents to play the game, you are risk preferring or risk loving. So we find that most investors are risk averse. However, we do have investors who are risk preferring. A more common term for them is they're crazy mofos. They will take on risky investments, willing to pay more than what the expected value of the game is in just to play the game. Most of you, and I'm looking at a couple that might be sociopathic, but most of you are risk averse. So you're going to try to take positions that have a better payoff than what you pay to get in, a better expected payoff than what you pay to get in. Stock markets are great for that. That's fine. Okay, so now, getting past that and going back to the issue of the equities and all that. As a rule, stocks are riskier than bonds. Just the rule. Now, there are plenty of exceptions to this rule. Very risky stocks versus very safe bonds. But on the other hand, there are very safe stocks and there are very risky bonds. And we'll talk a lot about that when we get to bonds a little later. But there's one side of the market, equities. You buy, sell stocks. Now the other side of this would be the bonds market. We tend to call that debt, or debt paper, or something like that. Many, many corporations issue debt, and you can buy that debt. Now remember, everything you're doing is going to be in the secondary market. You're going to probably never actually buy an opening of securities that have been issued by a company. A company wants to borrow $50 million. It issues debt securities, bonds probably, or something like that. Those are not going to be something you buy. You will buy them in the aftermarket, the secondary market. Same with stock. You're not going to buy an offering that is made by a company. You're going to buy it once it's out there in the secondary market trading among investors. But one way or the other, you can take on bonds. They're safe. Generally, we call them fixed income instruments, simply because they're going to pay you an interest payment every 6 months for the remaining life of the bond. A little safer, we tend to move people at older ages into bonds. However, a very good portfolio for a normal investor might include a few bonds. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute, too.
Now, there are exotics out there too. Generally speaking, we call them derivatives. If you are interested in the world of derivatives, by all means, take my 347 class and see that wild world out there. It's a world where you can turn a small fortune into an even smaller fortune in one day. You can become poor, P-O-P-O, beyond your wildest dreams. Or you can make a fortune. In a single day, you can be up and down a couple of $1 million if you are tolerant of that kind of risk. I'm going to stay away from that, though. And I'm going to focus for a little while on stocks. Now, most people think that you invest in stocks, but your purpose is to have the stock price go up, so you make some money off it. Okay, well, that's great. You are bullish. You think the stock price is going to go up. So, for example, today, I believe Warren Buffett announced that he is going to put money, or he has just put money, into Kroger. In other words, he is bullish on Kroger. He has bought a pile of Kroger stock. So that means that he thinks that that stock is going to go up in price. Now tomorrow, probably, I'm pretty sure it's already happening. All kinds of other investors are lining up to buy Kroger because Warren Buffett is doing it. So they are hoping, like he is, that the stock will go up. They're going to be disappointed because by the time they get their orders in, the stock price will have already gone up. And so they're not going to benefit as much as Warren did when he bought it at a very low price. Remember, the big dogs can always beat you to the punch on information. There is an exception to that I would mention. Back in my time, they started a sort of like a rule that small investors could get to the front of the line to buy a stock if there were a surge in the price. We call it, back in my time, SOESOs, the small order entry system. It's gone through a lot of evolution. However, it's still in place, but you still have to work fast. But a small order can get in front of big, big orders sometimes. So there is a possibility that if I put in a small order for Kroger tonight, executing tomorrow morning, well, I might actually get before the price surges all the way up. And then I can say, hey, Warren, I got there before you, neener, and then it'll, pay money to have me evaporate or something like that. Okay, now, putting in an order for stock.
And this is where we get some terminology. Let's look at Kroger. I think it's K-R. Yeah, Kroger. Let's go Kroger. Now, first things first, you have to look at the bid ask. You're going to pay, at best, the ask. Okay, but that's not necessarily true. You're going to put in your order. Now, right now, the ask is $29.98 on Kroger, the last price at the ask. So you're going to put in the order. That's the current best buying price. Now, you can do this a couple of different ways. Actually, there are a lot of variations on it. I could put in buy KR. Now, let me be complete on this. Buy 100 shares KR at market. Good for the day. What this means is that whatever the price is, they'll buy 100 shares. Now, that guarantees you're going to get, and it's good for the day, but that really it's not even, it doesn't matter. Execute the order. If you don't by the end of the day, then kill it.
obviously here. Here, the problem with buying at market is, okay, well, let me try this on you. Now, what would be the problem with buying at market? I know, it's okay. Can any of you think of why it would not be, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, what happens if by the time they execute your stupid order, Kroger is $50 a share? No. Yeah, exactly. Because at market means, well, whatever that ticket gets there to the floor, you get it. And that could be a real disappointment to you if the price has already popped before your order gets executed. So the buying at market might not be the best idea. We might instead do a limit order. So we'll say FTS on that, and we'll say buy 100 shares of KR at 30.50 or better. Good for the day. In other words, do not buy it if it's higher than 350. If it's lower than 30.50, I should say, execute the order. Go ahead, just do it. And that means the worst that could happen is you're going to be on the hook for $3,050 for the buy. Now, it used to be there were commissions. A lot of the bigger houses now are commission-free on simple buys and sells. Be careful about that. You want to make sure that it's really free. I've gotten burned by tedious Ameritrade because they're still charging an annoying fee on derivatives trades, on options. So I have to reach a little further on those. And, okay, so in other words, this is called a limit order, a limit order. Now, there another twist on this. I could say it might pop above 30.50 before the order can be executed. Well, that just pisses me off. However, I do think that it will settle back down below 350 at some point over the next week or so. So you might want to change this instead of good for the day to good till cancel, GTC, or good for the week or something like that. You have to be a little careful about GTCs, good till cancel, because you might forget. And then all of a sudden it dips down, they execute the order, and you say, where the hell did that money go that I had in my buying account? So be a little careful with good till cancel. Eventually they will expire on their own, but you might get a little surprised if you forget. Well, that order didn't execute by it because the opening bell program was already at 30.75, so it didn't execute, but then a few days later, after you've forgotten about it, it settles back down to, let's say, 30 on the ask, 30.48, and then instantly, boom, your order happens. So just be a little careful on good till cancels, the GTCs. These are just a couple of the things that you should know. Now, the trading is automatic now. We used to have to call the broker. Now it's all online on TD Ameritrade and all that. What I'll do on Wednesday evening is I'm going to actually execute a real live order on TD Ameritrade. Something stupid, so I don't get in a lot of trouble doing this, but I'll show you the different options. They have one good till canceled, good for the day, good for this, that, good for nothing, and then all the different aspects of it. I'll probably buy some kind of cheap old penny stock that I'm going to lose on, but who knows. But you'll see I'll actually execute an order through the TD Ameritrade buying interface. We'll also look at a few other things in TD Ameritrade and analysis of stocks and bonds. Okay, this is the basic outline of going long. I'm going long 100 shares of KR That's, in other words, I am buying the stock. Now later, I can go and sell that stock. That is not exactly going short. You're just dumping an investment. You might, okay, it's gone up, I don't think it's going to go up anymore, so I'm going to sell out. It's gone down, and I'm tired of the pain, I'm just going to sell it and take my loss. That happened with me on JCPenney. I'm telling you actual bad things as well as good things. I was bullish on JCPenney at $1 a share. I went long 100 shares. It was for $100. It was just straight $100 I put in. I was very, and it went up. And I think it made it up to $1.18 within about 2 to 3 weeks of my long position opening. And I was stupid. I got greedy. Well, it's going to keep going up. 10.4. Well, it did. It turned south, and now it's down to like 70. Where is it now? JCP. JCP. Really? I am suffering what is called an ass bath on this one. I now, and that's not the worst of it. See, here's what I'm going to sell it for, is 71 cents a share. Oh, I can, yeah, why don't you go long some more, fat boy? Yeah, look at that. Yeah, there, look, now, you see this chart, it's just down the ring of fire. It is not doing anything. I am going to sell it, and I probably will just wait until Wednesday, when you guys can see, and I'll execute the sale on it. You can see it's not intimidating at all. Unfortunately, it should be a little more intimidating than the way it is now with online trading. But you'll see me. I'm going to drop this SOB like a hot potato on Wednesday. Now you watch. Once I drop it on Thursday, it's going to surge to $3 a share. So anyway, that's the way the world works. It's like my... when I was in Catholic school years ago, why are things bad happening to me, Sister Maggie? Well, that's because Jesus doesn't love you, fat boy. He was so mean to me. God. Thank you, Cal. Okay, anyway. Look here. Do you see the declining tops? Do you see that steep drop off? See, that was when, right there, that is when I bought in. See, they knew I bought the stock, and that's what happened. Okay? Yep. Dumbass bought in, so that's a sure sell signal, and down. And now you've just got these declining tops. You see those declining tops there? That's a warning sign right there. Every time it tries to go up, it can't even make it to the last high before it. That's a bad sign. And the thing, though, that's a little bit disturbing to me here, that these bottoms are not declining like the tops are. So you're possibly going to get a crossing point. Now, this is pretty subtle, actually, because of the penny nature of the stock. But you see, when you're looking at stocks, this is technical analysis. It is technically not good to do. You shouldn't do technical analysis. But we all do it, and for some reason, it kind of works. Oftentimes, too often to be just coincidence. This would be declining tops, okay? Well, that's a bad sign right there. It keeps trying to get back to where it was, testing its short-term high, and fails to test over and over again, that's a sign that it's not going to go anywhere. That's a quick, dirty, just, I like the stock, let's take a quick look at the chart. Oh, I've got declining tops. I'll show you one that has rising tops in a minute. Okay, now the next thing that you're going to want to do here is look for the bottoms. In this case, I have declining bottoms too. See, each low is lower than the last low. That's nasty. That means you need to get miles away from this stock. However, you can have a situation, and I see it here, where you have declining tops,
see the declining tops, but you have rising bottoms. Which means that you look out here, where the crossing point is, it should be out here, the crossing point would be out here. And that is a trigger point.
You look at the price, where those two lines cross, where the declining tops and the rising bottoms are come to a head. In other words, that's your confrontation point. If it breaks to the upside, that's a buy signal. If it breaks to the downside, that's get the hell out of it signal. So, and that does happen, rather disturbingly. So, in other words, you watch for the signal to see which way you should go with the stock. I'll show you one here. But yeah, I'm just going to hold off until Wednesday and then dump dump JCPenney. Unless it surges, and then I'll have a problem. Let me see if I can find one. AFN. That's Abercrombie and Fitch. ANF, I'm sorry. Abercrombie and Fitch, ANF. Next thing you're going to look at. Here's, really? Oh, okay. Look at that. Do you see? Do you see the declining tops? This is year to date. So in other words, about a month and a half. Look at that. Do you see the declining tops? And do you see the rising bottoms? In other words, this is going to come to a head within the next few days. Now, I'm not going to go long Abercrombie and Fitch. I'm going to go long a contract of call options. In other words, I'm going to bet on just the price movement, not the total price, but just on the price movement. My bet is that it's going to break to the upside, but I'm not sure about that. Now, let me show you this. This is the earnings. Every company gives the Wall Street boys an estimate of what the next earnings will be. And then later, the actual earnings for that quarter are released. And one of the big things is watching the difference. Notice that Abercrombie and Fitch estimated for the first quarter of 2019, low. Their actual earnings came in above that. Wall Street likes that. Wow, you did better than you thought you were. Again, for the second quarter, Abercrombie and Fitch did the same thing. It was low on its estimate, and the actual number came in better. Again, good news. Same thing happened again in the third quarter. It was a little low on its estimate. It came in better. Wall Street's happy. This time, it was almost dead on. The last earnings report was almost dead on to the earnings estimate. And now, here's its earnings estimate. The question is, will it come in below, at, or above? Well, the thing would be, well, they've often usually been underestimating, so this would come in above, so this might be a real buy. The thing that makes me suspicious is, notice how every time their estimate and their actual were closer together until the very last time they were dead on. That worries me a little bit, that the next time, either this time, it's coming up March 4th, they're going to be dead on, or they might actually be below. Do you see how the trend has been this way? So the last time they were dead on, there's a little worry I have that it's going to be, they're actually going to have estimated too high, and then the stock is just going to be beaten crapless. However, it's a play. It's something to watch, and my bet is that you have the declining tops, you have the rising bottoms, it's going to come to a head within the next week or two, and so I'm going to bet that it will break to the upside. Now notice I'm using terminology here, break to the upside. In other words, it's coming into a box canyon, a kill zone. Is it going to come out winner, or is it going to come out the loser on that in that box? Now, this is going long. You can go long, and then you can sell out from your position.
You might sell out because, well, I think it's had its run. You might sell out because you need the money for some other investment, or you might just need the money to pay your bills. So you could sell. However, there is something else that you can do. Generally, people think that you're betting on stocks going up. However, a whole side of the market has to do with the opposite, betting that stocks will go down in price. This is called short selling, or going short. This is risky. However, going long is risky too. You have to understand that in normal stocks and bonds trading, you're pretty much at the mercy of the market. In other words, you are playing with the physics, literally the physics and the equations of science and the random behaviors and the statistical mechanics and all of that that you learn in the same principles in physics courses. You would know it at first, but then after a while it becomes kind of, these look like the same equations, they're going over in hand. Okay, however, games can be played. On the long side, you can have, now this is illegal, to a certain extent.
It's unethical. It's improper, it's rude, it's destructive. So we're going to talk about it because it happens. And I've done it. I did it back in the day. You make a stock go up in price so that suckers follow you in, and then you dump the stock once you've got enough suckers who have pushed the price up, helped the price go up. Okay? It's just something that's done. Oh, wow, that stock is going up in price. Tesla, oh, my God, OMG, it's going to 800. I saw an analyst who said it's going to go to 7,000. I believe him. I love me, that guy Cramer. Oh, yeah, he's really good. Ugly as sin, but he's good. Okay, don't do that. That's almost always a pump and dump. Pump and dump means that you are pumping up the stock price through news releases, paying pundits to promote the stock, getting it in the news in one way or another. You get the price to go up, and then you're long. You're long the stock. That's when you get that stock up high enough, then you dump it fast. And you get out. You make a nice buck, and you leave the suckers holding the bag for investments they made at high prices when you've caused the price to go through the floor. Eventually, we may see Tesla do that. When? I couldn't tell you. Now, there is a variation on pump and dump. It's called spoofing. And it works like this. What I would do as a big trader in a stock is I would put in a massive buy order. I might coordinate it with others who have the money to put in huge buy orders. The amateurs are going to see those big orders for the stock go in. They are then going to jump to the front of the line. Remember what I told you they could do, and buy that stock. Oh, the Wall Street boys are buying it. Wow, wow, wow. Buy in. And then we, the big boys, pull our orders. We just cancel them. We cancel those orders. And then all of a sudden, the stock drops through the floor. We do that just to pump the stock price up for some purpose or other, maybe for our short positions, which I'm going to show you. Now, with short positions, you have to watch out. It's illegal. It's still done. It's called running out the shorts. I'll explain that in a minute, but first I have to explain how short selling works. Before I do that, you have to understand that the stock market, user decides they're going to buy a stock. Well, I'm going to buy the stock of Kroger from her. No, you're not. You're going to buy it from some vast
ginormous pool. All the transactions go through clearing houses. You will never know who you bought stock from or who you sold it to. As a matter of fact, you probably will sell it to an individual. You might sell parts of it to one person, some of it to another, to an institution. There is no actual other person involved in a stock trade, ever. That's not how it works in organized exchanges. Everything happens through a clearing house. The buy orders come in, the sell orders come in, and then everything is worked out there in a split second. I mean, I would just drop, back in my time, you would put it in trade and maybe, you know, a day or two later, and yep, we got a confirmation. I've been doing these trades, and I click the button, and before I can even blink, literally, execute it. It is so fast that it happens these days. Understand that. There is no other person in a stock trade. There's just this vast pool of stock that is moving through the clearinghouses. So, now, going short. I personally think Kroger is going to go down. In other words, there are a lot of investors who think it's going to go up right now. I think it's going to go down. Well, I don't own any Kroger stock, so I can't sell it. Well, what can I do? Well, I can bet through a short sale. Okay. Short 100 shares KR at market cover at 28 GTC.
This is a little bit less risky.
Here's what I mean.
When I say short,
borrow on my account shares of Kroger at, let's say you get it at 17. What was that?
What was Kroger? I can't remember things for like 5 minutes. I have to write down what I'm eating for dinner on my hand while I'm fixing it. 28.23.
Okay, so let's say they can execute at, okay. Let's say that they can execute somewhere in that range right there, 29.90. Then immediately sell those shares. Here's what happens. Into my account goes $2,990 right away. I borrowed the stock and I sold it. You say, well, wait a minute. How does that work? Yeah, you can do it. As long as you have a margin account, you can do it. I got $2,990. Now, I have put in an order that when the stock price goes to $28 a share or better below that, I should have put in or better. Suppose that Kroger goes down to $28 a share in, let's say, 3 days. That would mean that the days to cover was 3. Okay, so now that triggers the cover. Buy those 100 shares of KR at $28 a share
and give them back. To where you borrowed them from. Now remember, you're just going to, you don't know where you, who you borrowed from. They just go back in to the pool. So remember, you have $2,990 in your account. So you have plenty of money to buy them back at the $2,800 for 100 of them. So you pocket the difference, $190. Now you'll pay some interest on that borrowed stock, a little interest payment. So keep that in mind. That's a short sale. That's going short. It's betting that a stock will go down. Yes, it's plenty. It happens plenty of the time. It's the other side of the market that people who don't learn this, don't come to have classes like this, never learn. As a matter of fact, I think I'm the only 240 teacher who actually teaches the two sides of trading, the long and the shorts. And yeah, okay, now, there are a couple of, this is great. I mean, as long as the stock goes down. The problem is, if the stock doesn't go down, you're sitting there on your fat ass paying interest every day on that stock you borrowed, and eventually you just give up because it's costing you a fortune to hold it. That's the bad thing. That's why you look, when you're looking at short interest on a stock, you look at days to cover. The higher the days to cover, the more the short sellers are struggling to get their covers done. I wanted to go, again, I don't have my, as usual, I don't have my bookmarks here. So let me find, okay, short interest. Let's see if I can find it at FINRA. Short interest. See if this will give me my screen. Where's my damn screen? Come on. Okay, short interest data. Really? All I want is just a basic screen. Equity short interest. I want just to be able to key in a symbol. And it won't let me do this. These are all nasty things. Oh, well, here's one. Pharma Inc. common stock. No, this is not what I want. I want something short interest. Let's do Kroger. Short squeeze. I thought they were kind of like, well, okay, let me do one. This will give me, this is old data. These are way expired data, but we can do it here. Okay, now, this is the days to cover, 5.2 days right now. Well, as of this. So that's not too bad. You begin to worry when you see days to cover 6, 8, 20, something like that. Now, the next thing you look at is short percent of float. In other words, of all the stock that is outstanding in Kroger, right now, about 4% is sitting in short interest plays. That's not bad. The horrible thing is when the short interest float gets to be a significant percentage of the stock. Because then, every time someone covers, everyone starts to panic and cover, buying the stock to cover their position. That causes the stock price to go up, and then you lose your shirt. So you don't want that short interest percent of float to get too high. Watch this one. Tesla, TSLA. That's beginning to worry. That's worrisome. Okay? The short interest right now, it's actually taking only a day and a half. Well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know. What is this? It's only taking a day and a half to cover short positions. That's good.
16% of the float right now is in short positions. That means, now here's what the Wall Street boys will do. They will let this build up, this short interest percent of float, and then they'll put in a buy order or spoof a buy order. That'll cause the stock price to skyrocket and all the shorts will panic. They'll just eat their losses and cover themselves because they realize that they bet wrong, and that's called running out the shorts, running the shorts out. And you've got to watch that. If the percent of float gets a little too high, you could have very easily, it becomes easier and easier for the big boys to run the shorts out. Simply, they pop the price a little bit, all of the short positions panic and they cover, and that drives the stock price up even more because they're all buying, and then you make a pocket a little bit of extra change by having the stock price go up. So be careful of that. There's all kinds of things you gotta be careful of. One more, just to get myself really irritated here. ANF. Holy shiitake. Look at this. To me, this is a buy signal. I wouldn't short Abercrombie and Fitch because first of all, look how long it's taking the shorts to cover. More than 6 days. In other words, they're struggling to cover. The ones who are betting against the stock are having a hard time covering their positions. The second thing is that the short position, the percent of float at 21.37%, means that if even a fart happens that scares the short positions, some good news from Abercrombie and Fitch, they're all going to start trying to cover, buying the stock to cover their butts, take their losses, and that means that the stock price is going to go like that. So for a long position, this high short interest percent of float is good news, especially with that days to cover being a little longer than normal. And just one more. Did I do Kroger? I did Kroger. One more that I am long. I am long this one. This is Gilead. Again, do not invest in what I invest in, for God's sake. You will end up like me, old with a crooked nose and a bad attitude. Poor. That worries me. Gilead is worrying me. There are very few shorts. Well, in a way, it's not. In other words, this is actually shouldn't worry me. This means that the market is generally very bullish on this stock. You don't have a lot of shorts forming on the stock. Even though Gilead, and now I'm going to take you back here. Gilead missed its last, is that? Oh, I put it in the wrong one. Gilead Pharmaceutical involved, it has developed a treatment for coronaviruses. It worked to help people with SARS and MARS, and this is a coronavirus that's hitting with the Wuhan thing. And so they are just starting to field test it in China to see if it works on this Wuhan. Okay, so now, look at this. Their estimates have repeatedly been, their estimates have been below. Is that right? Yeah.
You're on Apple.
Yeah, what am I doing? Oh, for God's, I was going to say, no, they've been below. GILD. What, are they trying to get me to buy Apple? I don't think so. Get a Mac. Be sad. Okay. I don't mean, yes, I do. Okay. Look, they were doing really well with their earnings estimates until this last one, and they were stupidly too high. Okay, so they estimated that their earnings would be for the fourth quarter They estimated their earnings would be $1.67. They were only $1.30. So that means that the market just paddled them, just punished the hell out of them. And so the GILD is issuing its next earnings report on March the 4th. I've got a call option betting on the stock popping on that earnings. We'll see, though. If I come in wearing nothing but a barrel, you'll know I lost my shirt, okay? If, however, they get back on track, well, that's good news, and I will make a very nice coin. And that means it won't be Denny's, it will be Cracker Barrel. And I mean, I'm talking the fried chicken, all white meat dinner with the green beans on the side and maybe some apple cobbler. Yeah, we're talking good times. And there I can just sit there and think about world domination. Okay, so now, don't hate. I mean, there could be something for you in that. I mean, the Duke of Decatur, the Princess of Peoria. The hell with you people. Look, okay, so in other words, this is what investing, and this is where it, if you've got a taste for it, it's, I hate to say the word fun, but it is. And it's, as long as, when you lose $50, you're still having fun. When you lose $5,000, fun is no longer a word in your vocabulary. You are using what money you have left to go and buy a dog so you can kick it. That was so wrong. I know.
Okay, you have to stay in shorts. This is the two sides of the market for equities. You can go long, you can go short. And it just depends. And also remember that you can be, some investors are eternally optimistic about the market. Every day is good news waiting to happen. Some investors are just the opposite. Every day we are going to hell. And if we don't go to hell, that's it, because Satan wants to torture us here in this mortal life a little longer. But then you have the people who are in the middle. They're bullish in some areas and they're bearish in other areas. I'm bullish on this stock, I'm bearish on this stock. That's a more finely divided thing. Or you can have bulls. They've been bullish for these past, since 2013. The stock market has been roaring upward for years now. And so you get a lot of people who are just going to, I'm bullish. Well, once we have a market crash and destroys their hopes and dreams for the future, then they become total bears. But the reality is that in general, people, especially when they are investors, tend to be optimistic, overly optimistic. So remember, if you feel yourself, you sort of get up in the morning and you look at the mirror and you look at yourself, you flex your muscles, you pull in your stomach like this and you say, moo. Okay, remember that down the road when you are 50, have a pot belly, and diabetes, and you have to take Lipitor for the clogging of the arteries near your heart, you're going to look at that same mirror and say, F you, and walk away. So, but younger investors tend, especially now, because they've never seen a bear market, they're bulls. Most of you are very bullish on the market, and even when I try to talk about the doom that's coming, you just brush it off and go back to being bulls. It takes a couple of bear markets to beat that out of you. You'll have one, and I will be so glad to welcome you to the ranks of the bitchy old assholes like me. Taking this off the board now. This podcast is probably going to not sound very good because I'm moving around too much. But there's that. Okay, now, let me go to just a little bit. Time value of money. Okay. I'm looking for a kind-hearted, good person. Someone who believes in people, who is charitable,
Damn, can't find anyone. Okay, here we go.
Let's try it this way.
Okay, Matt, I need $100. I'll give it back to you in a year. I'll give you $100 back to you. You okay with that?
Sure.
Sure. You don't look like the kind of person who's that size. Yeah, you see the problem here is that you give up the use of $100 for a year. That's where the interest comes in. Because interest is, at its heart, nothing but an opportunity cost for giving up money for it. I have $100. That means you can go to Red Robin and get one of those double cheeseburgers with the egg on it and the avocado and the onion rings and maybe the cheeseburgers and the bacon. You can't do that because I've got $100. Now you'll be able to do it in a year when I give it back to you. If I give it back to you, wah ha ha. You understand that interest is what we charge to compensate us. If there were a law that we could not charge interest, then there would be no lending. In the Middle Ages, it was drawn from ancient texts that were raised by both the later Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. All had prohibition on charging interest. That it was called usury. You should never charge interest. Now, the first ones to walk away from this rule were the ones who founded the original religion, Judaism. They said, it's okay if you do it, as long as you don't do it to your own time. Same thing with alcohol sales. In some religions, it's prohibited to sell alcohol. Unless you're selling it to someone who's not of your religion, instead of one they need to buy. So, but the concept of interest was prohibited. You could not lend money at interest to a borrower in the Middle Ages. It was decreed by the Holy Roman Catholic Church that was an abomination. It was prohibited by ancient scriptures. Okay. What that meant was that no one was lending money. You couldn't. I'm not going to lend money if I can't get some compensation for not having it. I'm not going to lend money without some compensation for the risk that you're not going to pay me back. I'm not going to lend money to you with the risk that I can't get out from under this loan. If I need the money, I couldn't sell the loan agreement to someone else. I'm not going to do that. The hell with that. And so there was a tightening of the financial flow of money. However, the church's decree did not apply to people of the Judaic faith. And therefore, you got the adverse stereotype that Jews were money lenders and all that. Yeah, they're always out to screw you. No, they weren't. They were not under the rule of the church. So they could lend money at interest and make money, and that's how you got the beginnings of banking starting. They were the ones, they could take your deposits and then lend them at interest to other people. And so, of course, then the church made them abide by the law so that there wasn't that outlet for the demand for capital. There were always ways around it. Now, interestingly enough, I saw the number 37. 37 countries in the world practice Islamic finance, which still prohibits interest on loans. And now there are some, as a matter of fact, there was a proposal maybe 3 or 4 years ago, shouldn't we kind of teach a course in alternative financial systems like Islamic finance? And I was game to do it. I said, do you understand what you're getting into here? This is seriously different. Then you had the
typical response from Western capitalists. Islamic finance is just the same as our finance. They just hide their interest, paying interest rates. No, they don't. That's a misunderstanding. They actually don't charge interest, not to fellow Muslims. So Islamic finance is an alternative. It does work, and it is run, it is what is operating in a number of countries. I wouldn't say that they're the developed countries of the world, any of them are, but they are, many of them are growing economies under the Islamic finance no interest system. So keep that in mind. I'm not teaching you the absolutes of the world. I'm teaching you Western capitalism as it exists now, not even as it existed earlier. Now, the rules about interest began to let up because it was it was basically inhibiting the growth of Western Europe, England, and all of that. And it began to finally let up. In fact, interestingly enough, during the later Middle Ages, the kings of England, liked to have wars with the kings of France. But there was not enough money to wage these wars, and so they started borrowing money from these massive pools of money that were available in the guilds. Specifically in England, the Guild of Beer Makers was flush with money. And so there was a gentleman, best known as a poet, probably the greatest poet of English literature, but he's not recognized because he wrote in Middle English instead of Shakespeare's more modern English. But his name was Geoffrey Chaucer. He acted as the financial intermediary. Remember that term that I told you? Between the kings of England and the guildmeisters, the beermeisters, the guild leaders, for the guilds to lend the king's money so that they could go over there and have wars with France and pillage and bring back all kinds of goodies. The next thing came out. This clearly set the stage for lending as at interest as okay. And it was very obvious and very clear that the more we allowed capital to flow by its own rules, in other words, interest and all that, the more we were beginning to grow. And come we did to a time in the late 1480s, when these explorers were saying, we need financing so that we can go to China by different routes to get really, really cool stuff that we can bring back here for the wealthy people to buy to make lots and lots of money. They needed capital. They needed debt capital. And it was becoming available. Banks were starting to show up, mainly banks that were run by powerful guild families and other powerful old families. Specifically, the Medicis were one of them, but there were others too. Well, come in this era, this hot dog and his brother. You recognize the main character's name. It was Chris. And in Latin, it's Christopher Columbus. He wanted money to go around the world by the ocean to get to China or India or someplace on the other side of the world instead of going the dangerous, miserably long route across the land. He said we can go around to get to the other side. No one really believed the world was flat by that time, except the same kinds of morons who think that now. He didn't know that there was this giant thing called the Americas in the way, but he went to the king and queen of Spain. England said that, and other places. But Cristobal Colomb, as he was actually called, he went to he said, I need money. And Queen Isabella, I think it was, she was receptive, but she didn't have ready cash. to do this. There is an old myth that she sold her jewels to finance it. That's not true. She was willing to stand by him because, my God, if they could get by ocean on giant galleons to the other side, to China, to India, and all of that, well, I mean, the fortune they would make, it would pay off massively to the lenders. Giant interest would accrue. Well, what he finally did was he and his brother and a few others went to a very wealthy, powerful person in Italy, or maybe it was Sicily, and he had ready cash. He made the agreement, okay, I will lend you the money for this journey. You will build three ships, the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria, and I will command one of those because I want to watch my investment. I want to be there for it. Okay. However, he said, what have you got that you can guarantee my return? This is where Queen Isabella came in. She pledged the jewels. Collateralized debt. Modern things, just all of a sudden, just boom, right there. A need was there to make big money. This wasn't for the good of mankind. This wasn't for wonderful new adventures. This was for money, a serious new resource. You had everything you could possibly want in China, spices, gold, silver, all kinds of neat art and trinkets and cups and bowls and all that. Well, he ran into the Americas and... Yeah, there was stuff there. It was okay. It worked out. Christopher Columbus, he came back with spices. He came back with slaves. And he came back with lots of stories of other stuff that could be over there. So it was a big payoff. The lender got a great return on his investment. And the queen didn't have to give up her jewels. And she got a lot of the credit for the voyage. And Christopher Columbus made a lot of money. And he did new adventures. But then, by that time, others were saying, we are going to do the same thing he did. And so suddenly the money started to flow from the old families in Europe. Those banks or those wealthy people started moving big capital into going out there and bringing back all kinds of cool stuff. And so this created a liquidity. Remember, liquidity is the ease with which one asset can be converted to another. We had liquidity occurring in the debt capital markets. And the more they did it, the more they brought back, and that made more lenders open their wallets to this. That meant more capital was actually going over there and building things so that they could more efficiently get into ports and all that, monopolize the big salt mines in the in other places of the world, and start to burn, pillage, and otherwise do everything that good capitalist nations do in their hegemony in empire building. And so we stand here today thanking the debt markets for where we are now. That's all I have for you tonight, I thank you.